It's Colorado Matters from CPR News. I'm Ryan Warner. The other day, I saw this banner advertising the latest show at the Denver Museum of Nature and Science. Mythic creatures, dragons, unicorns, and mermaids. The ad featured a fire-breathing dragon. We wondered what all of this was about, whether it's a way to capture people's imaginations, sell tickets, or if the Science Museum is moving into the realm of make-believe. So we invited Samantha Richards onto the program. She's a museum educator, and thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
So the Kraken, Cyclops, Chupacabra, since when did a Museum of Nature and Science start embracing the world of make-believe?
Well, these mythic creatures are so interesting from a scientific perspective. A lot of these creatures were believed to be real in the 17th century. You see dragons and unicorns and mermaids in 17th century natural history books. So we know now that most of them aren't real, but some of them are grounded in science. When you think about the Kraken, this giant octopus, it's probably based on a giant squid. So there had been giant squid that have died and washed up on shores, and they found pieces of them. But it wasn't until about the past 10 years we've actually gotten video of them living in the ocean.
Now, how might we have believed in earlier iterations of ourselves that dragons existed? Would that have been a misinterpretation of fossils or something?
Absolutely. So humans have been finding fossils as long as humans have been around on the Earth. And what we do as humans is base things on what we know, right? And so you find something that looks different and you think about other things that are alive. And to some people, fossils of dinosaurs looked like dragons. And so dragons became a thing. It's really fun to think about, right? This giant creature that can fly through the air and breathe fire. And they came up with a lot of reasons why dragons might be responsible for things they were experiencing, like dead sheep or caves that would catch on fire.
I see. So it's not even that they saw these remains and thought, oh, this is an animal that lived a long time ago. They thought they were living alongside it.
Absolutely. They thought these were remains of animals that they just weren't seeing in their daily life, but they lived somewhere outside of where they were living.
And this made it into textbooks or encyclopedias of the time.
Definitely. Unicorns were in textbooks, and unicorns lived in forests and had all these magical, mystical powers, but you could never see a unicorn because they stayed away from people. So that's why no one ever saw one.
I'm stymied by the fact that this made it into like general science books or just
absolutely natural history books.
Not just kooks at the time or something.
Not just
running
kooks.
With this. No. Okay, what about Cyclops?
Cyclops is really interesting. So those are based on fossils of ancient elephants. So elephants have a really interesting skull. They have a big hole in the front. That's where the trunk comes out. But if you'd never seen a living elephant, you don't know what a trunk is, you find a skull with two eyes and a giant hole in the middle. You think it must be one giant eye hole. And that is the foundation of Cyclops based on ancient elephant fossils.
All right. And then I'm thinking that maybe, I mean, I think of narwhals, right? Those whales. I think that's actually a tooth, not a horn. Is that
You're right.
Right.
So yeah. A narwhal tusk is a tooth.
Okay. I can imagine that leading, I suppose, to the thought that there were unicorns on land and in the sea. Maybe that's one of these creatures that kind of crosses over between myth and reality.
It is. So unicorns as a legend had already existed. And then the scientists or people at the time would start finding narwhal tusks, these long horns washed up on a beach. And so they would bring them back to Europe and sell them as unicorn horns. And unicorn horns had magical powers. They could purify water or they could be used to cure some poisoning. And so they would grind up the unicorn horn and sell it on the market for its magical properties.
Mm. Of course, there are still modern people who believe in somewhat magical healing powers of various animal parts, and that leads to poaching these days.
It does. That's true. The funny part is a lot of these things that were sold as magical things, dragon bones were also ground up and sold, were oftentimes rocks. So even the people who were selling them knew they weren't real.
I see. So there's a little bit of a fraudulent quality to some of this. There is in this exhibit a lesser known fraud, if you want to call it that, in Colorado, a fur-bearing fish?
The fur-bearing trout. Yeah, it's a wonderful local story. So in the 1930s, a local gentleman in Salida, Colorado, started the story that there were fur-bearing trout in the Arkansas River. But you could never capture a fur-bearing trout because they only had fur in the month of January, and you're not allowed to fish in the month of January. So just believe him, they were there. And this drove a lot of attention to the town of Salida. So it worked. It solved the purpose. So he was trying to drive tourism, and people eventually caught on and said they needed to see one. So he went to a local taxidermy shop and had them glue some fur on a trout and create a fur-bearing trout.
And this is in the exhibit.
We have a replica of a fur-bearing trout.
A replica. Okay.
Well, it's a real fur-bearing trout, but not the original fur-bearing trout.
I see. Let's post a photo of that, shall we, to cprnews.org. There's an elephant bird egg. What's this about? Another con, is I guess.
Well, no, it's real, actually. So there was a bird that lived in Madagascar until the 1500s called the Apiornis, or the elephant bird. And it laid the largest egg 2 gallons in size. So think about 2 gallons of milk.
Wow.
Pour that volume into an egg and think of a bird egg. That's what it is. And this is a real animal that lived. People saw it, but it went extinct in the 1500s. And it might be the origin of some stories of more fantastical birds, birds that were so big they could carry an elephant flying through the air. Because people saw the elephant bird, it went extinct, and then, you know, it's sort of like a fish tale. The more you tell the story, it gets a little bigger, and now it can fly, and now it can carry an elephant.
And maybe it could breathe fire. Who knows?
Sure.
What is the upshot here? So lots of great stories, and I see now how this connects to science. What do you want people to take away from this?
Well, there's a couple of different things. One is that science can be fun, that science is always changing, and to think and look critically at the world around us, right? And also using your imagination. I think it's great for kids to come in, use their imagination, bring these creatures to life in their imagination. We have an area in the exhibit where they can draw their own mythic creature, so it gives kids and everyone the opportunity to create their own fantastical beasts, but also to connect with cultures all around the world. A lot of these creatures have roots and origins in different stories and folklore from cultures around the world and are still important today. Think of the dragon dance for the Chinese New Year, for instance. Culturally important, even though they don't believe a dragon really existed.
Is there potentially a danger here? That is, there is a lot of questioning of science. And here the museum is dabbling in the imaginary. Do you blur the line?
You know, I don't think we blur the line. I think what we're actually doing is doing an excellent job of presenting that science is always changing. And it has always changed and it always will change as we learn more about the world. And so I think this exhibit does a good job of presenting that.
I think it'd be interesting to see what myths we hold today that might be blown out of the water in 25 years or something.
I think that'll be very interesting.
Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having us.